Yes, today my country is going to be one of the biggest days in Venezuela history. For the past 25 years, we had people there, and me, I was part of it. We have lived in a dictatorship, and I really pray to God that it comes to an end. I don't think any player has spoke about this, but I really pray to the U.S. government to keep an eye on it, because they're going to do whatever they're going to do to stay in the power. But the country is speaking, and we all want the change. And it's really, I got really emotional, because last night, I know what's going to happen today. It's really tough for all the Venezuelans, and especially for me, because I had a chance to play for Venezuela and I didn't, and I regret that. But today, I think it's the one of those days where my emotions were there, and I'm really praying to God for a complete change in Venezuela, because all the Venezuelan people needs that, and we need the change for good.
You know, when you're in the dugout after a game, and this was after, I think, the night that Goldschmidt hit the home run and we won the bottom of the ninth, whatever, the St. Louis Cardinals, the press pool goes over to Wilson Contreras, DH and catcher for the St. Louis Cardinals. He had gotten, like, visibly emotional, was crying on the field, and the press responsibly asked him, what's going on? Well, Contreras is from Venezuela, and he was talking about the election that was about to happen. And the impact of what is taking place right now in Venezuela is something that the world should be watching. There might be ties to what's going on in the United States. I don't know. We're going to ask our expert about that in a second. But I found it very interesting that Contreras, a Venezuelan, looking at the elections that were about to take place, since then have taken place. Now the country is in protest all over the place regarding those results. This is an incredibly impactful thing. And that is the type of emotion that comes when you have the ability to escape a dictatorship. That emotion stays with you. Let's get to our guest. Jim Carafano joins us once again, senior counselor to the president and E.W. Richardson fellow for international engagement at the Heritage Foundation. Jim, welcome back. Good to have you.
Hey, it's great to be with you. I would say this is a surprise where we are, but it was absolutely 1,000% predictable that we were going to be at this day. And to me, what's mostly shocking is that we have a U.S. government which was totally unprepared for this.
So can you explain, you know, Maduro, a dictator, I was trying to follow this as it was going on. It didn't look good for him, but then all of a sudden he claims victory. Then a lot of things get shut down in the middle of the night. And then there's a proclamation of victory the next day. And now it looks like even people who are on Maduro's side in the streets are starting to potentially take over or to go in with the other protesters that they were supposed to be policing. Where is Venezuela right now?
We don't know. I mean, this is often the way with dictatorships. I always recommend that people read Natan Sharansky's book on the case for democracies. One of the things about dictatorships is it's all based on this premise of control and power. And because it's controlled and power, there's no transparency. And even the people running the regime don't know how fragile or how firm their control is. And so that's why when these things do collapse, they collapse suddenly, and it's a surprise to all of us. So whether we're at the day where this regime, literally the people supporting it, walk away and Maduro is, or not, remains to be seen. I mean, don't forget, the last time these guys got in trouble, they flew in a bunch of Cubans and other people to prop them up. So the Cubans, this is not an isolated regime. They're backed by narco traffickers, the Cubans, the Russians, the Chinese, the Iranians. So they have lots of cards they can call on for help. So whether they can do that and oppress the population and put down the violence, much the way the Iranians have put down multiple popular uprisings in Iran under the Ayatollah, we don't know. I don't even think they know until we see what happens.
I mean, we're not going to see, my assumption, my probably ignorant assumption is, Maduro's not going to go, well, I lost, and then turn over power. Right. I mean, it seems like if it's either the dictatorship continues or there's going to be a lot of violence, likely death and destruction that's going to take place in between Maduro's dictatorship and whatever comes next.
Well, I mean, there could be, he could maintain control and get a lot of violence, because you have to remember, he is not isolated. He always has access to the Chinese and the Russians, the Iranians and the narco traffickers. So if he survives this, claim of winning an election, there will be people who will bail him out and keep him in power. we just have to look at it from a grossly U.S. perspective. Venezuela has been a monumental problem. It is one of the platforms for massive human trafficking in the United States from all over the world, narco trafficking and criminal gangs and everything else. So Venezuelans have been exporting disaster into the U.S. for years. The Biden regime had a strategy of engagement and alignment, that we figure out a way to engage with people, we figure out a way to have common, and then we, you know, and that's going to take, and it's clearly not working. I mean, it hasn't worked anywhere. It didn't work with Yemen, didn't work with Iran, didn't work with anybody. And this one's right in our own backyards. And what's stunning about this is they gave a whole bunch of things to these guys, and they said, oh, you'll hold free and fair elections, right? And they said, oh, yeah, sure. And of course, nobody thought they would, and they didn't. And now our administration is just literally the leader of the free world is a guy in Argentina, right? The president of Argentina. Mm-hmm. He is literally rallying the free world in support of Venezuela. When the guy and girl that are supposed to be the leaders of the free world, they're basically sitting in Washington, and I don't know. I don't know what they're doing. Maybe they're watching the Olympics. They don't have time for this. I don't know.
Well, I think about the American government's interest in what's going on in Ukraine, pushing back against Putin. You've listed off a lot of nefarious players or not friends of the United States that are in support of status quo in Venezuela. What would you like to see America do to aid or involve themselves in what's going on in Venezuela?
Yeah, I mean, look, what you always do is, look, I don't believe in regime change. I don't believe in nation building or any of that junk. But I do believe in supporting people that want to speak for themselves. So this is a problem that has to be solved by the Venezuelans. We could put enormous pressure to cut off the things that help Maduro stay in power. And we've done that before. And, you know, timing is everything. I mean, if we did that now and we did that in a massively aggressive way, the government, I would think that would contribute to the government falling. Yeah. Or we can just sit back and look like yahoos, which is kind of what we're doing.
Let's shift gears to the Middle East. Fox News reports the Israel Defense Forces announces that they carried out a strike in Beirut on Tuesday, targeting the commander accused of orchestrating the recent attack on a children's soccer field. The IDF said that its forces, quote, carried out a targeted strike in Beirut on the commander responsible for the murder of these children and the killing of numerous additional Israeli civilians. It seems as though in the last 24, 48 hours, things have escalated in that region. What's taking place?
Yeah, I wouldn't say escalation, because what's interesting about this strike is it was designed evidently to be proportional. Somebody did something, they went after the perpetrators. It wasn't like the Israelis launched a broad preemptive campaign against Hezbollah. So it still seems that they are trying to ward off Hezbollah. You know, everybody knows that Hezbollah is 10 times the military that Hamas has, a much bigger problem. But if Hezbollah wanted to pick a war with Israel, the time to do that was when Israel is bogged down with Hamas. The Israelis are free to be more demonstrative in facing Hezbollah because they pretty much kind of wrapped up the Hamas problem in Gaza. That frees up resources to then turn north. So, Hezbollah has a lot more military power. Yeah, they can do a lot of damage, but now they're also facing, you know, pretty much the full might of the Israeli military. Do they really want to do that? My guess is what we saw today is that the Israelis think not. So this is a hammer blow to tell the Hezbollah to back off. So, you know, the interesting thing is none of this would happen if it wasn't for Iran, which, by the way, was another example of an administration's strategy of engagement and alignment, which didn't work, right? Mm. But Iran, they are perfectly willing to fight to the last Lebanese or the last Palestinian.
Yeah, it's different stakes, different values. I mean, when you're talking about Venezuela, when you're talking about what's going on in the Middle East, it seems as though there's always a common few names, but specifically Iran is what is what always seems to be at the epicenter of these conflicts. And I can't help but look at the policy, the very heavy hand that the previous administration took towards Iran. And then if you go back another administration right. to the Obama administration and compound that with the Biden administration, we've had very dramatically different approaches to how we handle the Iranians. Does that play yeah. into what's happening in the world?
Yeah, I'm going to say this, and look, I always, you know, I always say this 1,000 times. I'm not partisan, not Republican, not a Democrat, don't have a dog in the fight. But, I mean, to me, this is one of the frustrations of this particular news cycle, which is we have media and everybody basically focused on painting this amazing narrative of Harris, who's now the presidential candidate, and ignoring the reality of Biden, Harris. So, you know, we've had two things in the last 2 days. Literally, she's the one that stepped forward and said, oh, I'm really worried about, you know, children dying here. And, well, the day after she basically said, you know, I'm for Hamas and Hezbollah, what happened? Well, the day after, Hamas refused the ceasefire deal because America just gave them a signal that they've got their back. And then the day after that, Hezbollah does an attack and kills a bunch of kids. So if you want a demonstration of poor judgment in foreign policy, that's kind of it. Everything in the Middle East got worse a day after you basically gave the green light to the bad guys. And she, you know, she can deny this, but she was the partial architect of the engagement policy in Latin America, which was supposed to help secure the border. And that policy, as we saw with Venezuela today, isn't unbelievably abject failure. Now, look, I'm not telling you who to vote for, but those are legitimate issues to be discussing in the news cycle. Mm-hmm. Look at the direct consequences of your leadership as a foreign policy leader. And yet nobody really wants to talk about that yeah. except you and, you know, a couple other people. And instead they want to have a narrative about, isn't this historic? Isn't this great? Isn't this wonderful? Don't we have another, you know, kind of wonderful shining moment here, which is all about narrative, the spinning a narrative of the candidate and not talking about judgment, policies, and character, which in my mind are the things that really ought to matter when you pick a president.
We're speaking with Jim Carafano here, and I'm curious, you know, I go back to in my mind when the Vice President Harris was being asked about the border, have you been to border? And she's like, we've right. been to the border. And she said, well, I haven't been to Europe either. And I'm just thinking like, wow, what a statement about somebody who's potentially going to end up being the president of the United States. It doesn't seem as though she has the real life experience of engaging across the world and being in these areas and understanding them. It gives me pause.
Well, I agree. Okay, you, there are lots of places in the world I haven't been to that I talk policy about. You've been the vice president for 4 years. By your own admission, and by the president's admission, you're a key member of his leadership team. You agree with everything he has done. And we don't have to talk about your travel plans. I don't even care if you've ever touched the border. But we can talk about the policies that have been implemented for 4 years and ask the kind of question that normally, you know, is the question we ought to ask, which is, am I better off than I was 4 years ago?
It's a very simple question to ask. I want to ask you one other topic, and I don't know how much of the hearing on the Senate that you were able to hear today about the Secret Service, but I wondered your thoughts on the massive system failure, maybe something more that took place when Donald Trump was shot and somebody else lost their life.
Yeah, I actually have an observation on this. I actually haven't heard a lot of people talk about it. Everybody gets the first part of this comment, which is, look, these guys really only have one job. I mean, there's some other stuff they do, but they exist for one purpose, to protect candidates, to protect high officials, to protect national. That's the only purpose they have in life, and they failed at that. But not only did they fail, the attack that we had is actually reflective of almost every presidential assassination attempt we've had in history. It's not Carlos the Jackal. It's not some super complicated Mission Impossible plot. It's somebody thinking they're going to go kill the president, doing something that it, like, ought to be stopped. Like, this should not work, right? This is kind of a stupid idea. Like, go in a in a high security event and then just think, well, I'll just go up there and, you know, shoot him, right? So most security is actually designed to stop people just like this. The people who are more, I would say, lucky than good, because that doesn't sound right. But what I'm saying is, it's not designed to stop Carlos the Jackal. Mm-hmm. It's designed to stop the crazy Yahoo who wants to make a headline by killing the president. So they have not only failed in their basic mission, they failed against exactly the kind of plot that they know they have to deal with. They nobody was asking them to stop, you know, this Mission Impossible team with disguises and secret weapons. They were asked to stop a guy who's 20 years old with no military experience, with no operational experience, who learned how to do all this stuff basically, you know, on, well, I guess watching YouTube, and an AR-15. And they failed. This is such a catastrophic failure. This would be like the invasion of Normandy and the army forgetting to show up. That's how bad this is.
Is it easily fixable?
I can only presume, because I don't know, I don't have facts, that when you have an organization that is purpose built for a purpose, and it's funded to do that purpose, and it utterly catastrophically fails, that it's a problem of leadership. So the answer is, if that's true, then the answer is, yeah.
Yeah. Change the leadership. Jim Chiarifano, thank you. We love talking to you about these things, and you always provide a lot of insight. We're grateful for it. Thanks for being here.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Bye-bye.
See you next week.
Yep.
Bye.
Next week. Jim Chiarifano, senior counselor to the president and E.W. Richardson Fellow for International Engagement.